You're listening to Modern Infrastructure, the official podcast of TechTarget's Modern Infrastructure e-zine. To read the latest issue, visit searchdatacenter.com/modern-infrastructure.
Hello there. Welcome to the May edition of the Modern Infrastructure podcast. I'm Christine Signoli, managing editor of Modern Infrastructure, and I'm here with Alex Barrett.
Hello.
Alex is editor-in-chief of Modern Infrastructure. So the key topic that's on our minds right now is our big annual Modern Infrastructure Decisions Conference, which is next week in New York City. And Alex and I will both be there. I'm really looking forward to seeing lots of our contributors and our writers and, of course, lots of our readers. So it's a day-long affair, and we've got two tracks, an infrastructure track and a cloud track. So within that, there's all kinds, obviously, a lot to talk about and all kinds of different topics and different discussions that will be going on. One of the things that caught my eye is Scott Lowe's going to be talking about hyperconvergence, among other things. And Alex's cover story for this month is on hyperconvergence and what's happening there. We're sort of going beyond converged infrastructure at this point. Alex, tell us a little bit about your story and your research.
So just when you thought you were getting your head around converged infrastructure, so you know, bundles of servers, storage, and in some cases networks, we have a whole new crop of startups that are coming down the pike with hyperconverged offerings, which do the same thing, you know, servers and storage, plus, but with some level of clustering software that automatically discovers other nodes and scales up nicely. Other people call it software-defined storage. A lot of the hyperconverged players have their roots in storage, so they tend to offer a lot of storage features like replication or dedupe or thin provisioning, etc. And then there's sort of the ersatz hyperconverged systems from VMware, although Microsoft also has storage spaces. And so VMware vSAN is software hyperconvergence, you could argue. And that's great if you already have a VMware environment and existing infrastructure. So that's pretty interesting stuff. And I know, yeah, Scott will be talking about that. He's a big proponent of modern infrastructure, but also of any flash-based systems. He's a big fan of flash, and hyperconverged systems tend to use and rely on flash storage pretty heavily. So for more, yeah, come to our conference. It should be a good time.
Yeah, definitely. Well, also, we're on Twitter now. We've joined Twitter. We're tweeting. So
you're tweeting.
I am tweeting. I am tweeting. I'm loving tweeting. I'm really enjoying it, actually. And Scott, it's great to read Scott. Scott's on there. So it's been interesting catching up with what he is doing before the show. But we're at Modern Infra on Twitter. So you can catch up on the day of the show on May 15th on Twitter if you're not in New York. And if you're in New York at the show, come find us. It'll be great to meet everybody.
So the other one of the other things that we have going on this month is we have with us here in the studio our intrepid reporter, Beth Parisot.
Hello.
Formerly of Search Cloud Computing, but more recently has moved on to better pastures at Search AWS, so gone from the macro view of the cloud computing world to not the micro view, but the specific AWS view of things. Last month caught up with Lance Crosby of SoftLayer, a.k.a. IBM's cloud guru. And so I was hoping, Beth, reading your story, what in your, obviously IBM has its own pitch about why enterprises should choose them, but what are at a high level the differentiators of SoftLayer versus another cloud offering?
I think IBM would first point to their bare metal capabilities. They're able to programmatically manage bare metal servers the way that other clouds manage virtual machines. Rackspace has something like this, but SoftLayer has kind of made it its claim to fame. I think they also say, I think this is a quote, "We're just a whole lot more enterprise-y than competitors are." So, people trust the IBM brand, and they, you know, are used to buying from IBM, and you know, they feel a little bit more confident if they're loyal IBM customers that they're getting something enterprisey.
Mm-hmm. And the reason that bare metal is better? 'Cause
it can be higher performing, especially for transactional workloads like databases.
And do you lose anything in when with not having virtualization, or they claim that they get around?
Yeah, they claim that they get around that issue, that you can manage it, you can spin it up and down just like a virtual machine, just as easily. Obviously, mobility would not be the same, but as far as management, they allow it in the same console, the same techniques and methods as far as they can with bare metal. And, you know, that's the main technical differentiator. Okay.
And is that their story, bare metal, and we're sticking with it, or do they offer both?
They offer both.
They offer both, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, you know, just in IT, everybody, the old maxim is no one ever got fired for buying IBM.
Right.
Can you say the same for the IBM cloud, or is it still too early to say?
I think they're banking on that. I think that's the message that you're getting from them very strongly. But I haven't seen any customer numbers for SoftLayer since the acquisition. I imagine, you know, they have a certain amount of people that are kind of automatically going to go in the direction they're going. So, you know, SoftLayer itself was a relatively new company. It was purchased by IBM last year. So there's probably going to be a feeling out period, especially for the most stringent enterprise requirements.
Mm-hmm. So the other day I was chatting with some folks at Eucalyptus, and I asked them if they make private cloud software that's tightly aligned with AWS, and I asked them, you know, so do you have any plans to venture out beyond AWS, or is it AWS from here on in? And the quote was, well, we know who Coke is, and we're just waiting around to see who's Pepsi. And to They brought up Google as a possible Pepsi in the cloud world, but does IBM stand a chance at ever becoming that Pepsi, or do you think that someone else is a more likely candidate?
I think as far as being like Amazon, IBM itself, Lance himself said that they're really, you know, they're technically like Amazon in a lot of ways, so self-service and programmatic approach to infrastructure. But, you know, that they're not necessarily in a race to the bottom on price with Amazon, that, you know, maintaining enterprise performance and security is more of a priority than having fungible resources for developers. They understand that they need to cultivate the developer audience, but that's not their primary approach to the market. So I would say that, you know, Google would probably be the most likely candidate for a cloud provider that is playing tit for tat with Amazon as far as pricing goes. They have the web scale infrastructure like Amazon did ahead of time for themselves rather than building it for other companies. I think that Google is kind of the favorite right now as far as who's going to compete with Amazon, who's going to challenge them.
Mm-hmm. But IBM could emerge as sort of a, you know, the ginger ale.
Yeah, maybe Dr. Pepper.
What about RC Cola?
There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So talk to us a little bit about the switch from reporting on cloud in general to AWS in particular. Any
Well,
any
you know, AWS is its own vast world. So, you know, I had reported on AWS, but mainly from an EC2 standpoint. There are lots of other services that you can dig into. Lots of other capabilities that they have, and they have multiple audiences. So the cloud computing beat was really focused on enterprises with existing infrastructure and the problem of integrating that infrastructure with a new cloud paradigm. This beat will involve more developers, startups that could start from scratch, people that are really on the cutting edge of what Amazon can do. So it's definitely exciting.
Mm-hmm. And you were telling me earlier that you just finished reading The Everything Store?
Yes, yes, great book. Mm-hmm. It's about Amazon's origins with Jeff Bezos. It's actually Bezos, not Bezos, which is another fun fact I learned from the book. And about his early days as a bookseller, working out of a garage with a door for a desk, and working through all the way to the advent of Amazon Web Services and the hiring of Werner Vogels, and, you know, kind of, it's kind of an origin story. So,
and so do you see the company differently after having read that?
Yes. You know, it gave me more of a sense of kind of their overall relationship with press. I think in the early days especially, but it continues today, you have a lot of skepticism on Wall Street because of their long-term view of things rather than the short-term quarterly views. You know, Bezos has said they're willing to be misunderstood for long periods of time, and they have a kind of contentious relationship at times with Wall Street analysts as well. So this is a company that's kind of used to circling the wagons and turning out to be right when a lot of people say that it's not going to work. So it definitely helped me understand where they're coming from a little bit more as a company and what their previous history has been with folks like me.
And what can sometimes feel like a slightly cavalier attitude towards enterprise IT and the world that we live in.
Sometimes, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, really looking forward to reading what you come up with, because...
Thanks.
It's a brave new world, and it's exciting stuff.
It is.
Yeah, thank you so much, Beth. And thanks, Alex. We'll be back here next month with another edition. We'll hope to see you all at our show next week. And yeah, thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
You've been listening to Modern Infrastructure. To read the latest issue, visit searchdatacenter.com/modern infrastructure.